Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of the JMO Podcast. I'm your host, Taylor Michaels, and in this episode, we get to know a brand new guest. That's Joe Henry, and we're going to do a deep dive into one of the most popular fishing destinations year-round here in the Midwest, and that is Lake of the Woods. So let's get into this here. We're going to get to know Joe first and get to know his background in fishing. A very fun, interesting story that Joe has on himself. And then getting into Lake of the Woods, Joe, for the, 10 plus years now, he's been in the industry promoting fishing opportunities and promoting Lake of the Woods and everything that is offered up there. And that's what we're going to do. We're going to talk about the big picture of Lake of the Woods and what's going on up there this time of year. Especially, it's just really fun to have these conversations. It's a fun time of year. Obviously, year-round, Lake of the Woods has a lot going on and is very attractive for anglers of all skill sets. And it doesn't matter who you are or how much gear you have, Lake of the Woods has phenomenal offerings. Obviously, that's going to be a big part of this conversation. There's some big fish being caught through the ice still right now up there, especially talking northern pike. The late ice northern pike bite is always a thing up there, including the Rainy River run, right? I mean, all those Lake of the Woods walleyes are pushing into the Rainy River to spawn and eat shiners, and so we're going to talk about that. So just a great conversation getting to know Joe, and a great conversation building a better picture of Lake of the Woods. I think I've dedicated a lot of shows here over the lifespan of this podcast to learning or just sort of paying attention to new fishing opportunities specifically, and finding those opportunities that are maybe underappreciated or less known. And I probably haven't spent enough time talking about, some of the bigger, more well-known fishing opportunities or destinations, if you will. But I just feel like Lake of the Woods, it's important to remind people just everything that is offered up there. It is such a turnkey operation, no matter who you are. There's a lot of places where we go that are big fish catching destinations, but whether it's the amenities or the type of resorts or the price tag on some of this stuff, it's not for everybody. But Lake of the Woods truly is a great bucket list destination for everybody. It just, no matter who you are, it offers so much. So that's what we're going to talk about. Get to know Joe, talk about Lake of the Woods. So yeah, let's get to it. Joe Henry, it's your first time on. I'm really looking forward to this. You and I have never met. We probably have a grand total of 30 seconds corresponding together. So this is going to be a very genuine get-to-know session here. I would like to know a little bit of your background. Go back as far as you possibly can. I want to know where your passion for fishing or the industries comes from. Where are you from? Did you have a home body of water? Maybe some mentorship when you were younger? Like, even those, those childhood stories that we all... we all really cling to, even in, as our career moves on. Like, I really like starting there just to get to know somebody, man. What can you tell me about yourself?
Well, like many anglers, started out when I was really, really young. And, I had some older brothers take me fishing, but I had one special uncle that would take me fishing quite often. And, he really got me into it. And, I got to tell you, man, I don't know what it was, but fishing just, it's all I could think about. I mean, when I go back and, My mom over the years had saved different papers I had done in maybe grade school, every possible thing I could, draw a picture of or write about was about fishing. I can remember, waking up to watch Saturday morning cartoons as a little kid and just hoping and praying that my uncle would call me. And at a certain time in the morning, if he didn't call, I'd call him and try to talk him into going fishing. I mean, it just absolutely consumed me. And so I was bit by the bug early on. My parents rented a cabin when I was very, very young. And then they decided not to rent it anymore. And then eventually one of my brothers bought a cabin nearby. I grew up in St. Cloud, Minnesota. So they bought a cabin on Pearl Lake. So my one brother owned it for a number of years. And then coincidentally, my other brother bought it from him. So that gave me access to Pearl Lake as I was growing up. When I grew up in St. Cloud, it was two bodies of water. It was the Mississippi River. We have a dam down by St. Cloud State University. Below the dam is pretty good fishing. And then there's a little lake just a few blocks away from the neighborhood I grew up in, right in the middle of St. Cloud. And they use it for a skating rink in the winter, but it's called Lake George. I don't think anybody ever thought there's any fish in Lake George. If they did, it was sunfish and crappies, and But I can remember going down there as a young guy, and you know, I was whipping Rapalas, I was whipping Johnson Silver Minnows, and you know, I can remember going into the my transition to the seventh grade was kind of hard. You know, it was kind of a homebody, and you know, you go from a small grade school to where all the grade schools are all combined, and you got your bullies and your outspoken kids and everything else, and it was just kind of a hard transition. And one fall, I went down to Lake George with a couple of buddies, and I was using a Zepco 404. I don't know if you remember those,
but it's
an old closed face reel with a real loud drag system on it. And I was using a Johnson Silver Minnow, and I'd cast that thing out, and I'd let it sink in this basically oversized pond. And I'd let it sink, and there's people all around the highways on one side. You know, you got a skating rink, a building there, and you got swans, and, you know. And so I'd let it sink, and I'd reel it in and jerk it and let it sink as it, and drop it back. And I'd reel it in, stop it, and let it drop back. And all of a sudden, I got the thing by shore, and there was a huge swirl. And I set the hook on that fish, and the fight was on. And it was a big pike. And, I mean, you know, I'm talking about this fish running and jumping and coming totally airborne out of the water. You know, after a while, I had a crowd of about 10 people around me. And, you know, my heart was going out of my chest. I mean, this is the biggest fish I ever had hooked. And I got it close to shore, got it near shore, and it jumped out in the water and took another long run. I thought, oh, no, I'm going to lose it. The drag was just screaming, real loud drag system on his Zepco 404. So I ended up getting that fish close to shore. And a buddy of mine who's now deceased, bless his soul, but Mark Huberty, he went down, and back in the day, you know, we'd grab pike. If we thought we were going to keep him, we'd grab him in the eyes. And he went down and grabbed that pike by the eyes and lifted that huge fish up. And I said, get it up on shore, get away from the water, you know. And some of the older guys, they were clapping, you know. And we brought that up on shore, and ended up being about a 12 and a half pound pike, which,
jeepers,
you know, it's not a monster, but for a young kid and a local pond, you know, pretty good size. So as I was walking home, you know, I kept the fish. And I was walking home, I put my bike cable for my 10-speed through the mouth, out the gills, you know, and I was carrying it over my back, and I couldn't drive my bike at the same time. So I ended up just walking my bike and the fish and all my tackle home. And as I walked by St. Cloud Tech High School, you know, the women's tennis coach was coming out after practice. And she said, oh my gosh, did you catch that in Lake George? Yeah, I did, you know. And she goes, would you mind if I had the local news reporter, the sports reporter, get a hold of you? I deal with him, you know, all the time for tennis. I said, geez, I don't care. So that weekend, you know, that myself holding that big pike was a headline on the local sports section of the paper. And I think it said something to the effect of, you know, Lake George, this angler's favorite. And the storyline was that nobody could believe that there was that big a fish that lived in that little pond that you drove by all the time. So I don't know. I think what probably happened was, you know, I think there's anglers would go down to the Mississippi River and catch a few fish and decide they're a little too tired to clean them up, so they dump them into Lake George back in the day. I really do. And that pond, you know, used to be a lot bigger. It used to extend way over by St. Mary's Cathedral Church. It was a much bigger area, and it was like a lake, you know, and they filled it in, and the lake is like 35 feet deep, so it's certainly deep enough to hold fish in the winter. And but that kind of got me going, you know, and that was one of those moments that, you know, if I wasn't bitten by the bug already, that did it. And coincidentally, about a week later, I got a 10-pound pike out of there. And I've got 26-inch walleyes, 3.5-pound smallies right out of that little pond. And, you know, it just grew from there, man. When I had a chance to get out and spread my wings and, you know, get in high school. And my dad had a boat and trailer, you know, a 14-footer he bought. That kind of got me a little bit more mobile, and you know, really just kind of stemmed from there. Probably similar to many people's stories. I mean, you know, here you got a young guy who's just in, all he can think about is fishing. And that was me. And to some point, I mean, I don't, you know, the Minnesota Fishing Opener would roll around, and, you know, the night before the fishing opener, I couldn't sleep. That's how excited I was. I mean, I just thought about it. I couldn't sleep. When I was old enough to have permission to fish, we'd always have a family fishing tournament for the opening day of fishing. And I'll tell you what, when I was old enough, at 12:01 a.m., I'd be out pulling, I'd be trolling Rapalas for walleyes all night long. And then I'd fish all day till 5 o'clock. And I was bound and determined to win those family trophies, you know. And you know, once in a while I did, once in a while I didn't. But I didn't go down without a fight, I'll tell you that.
Oh, man, you probably got the lake record there on that little pond in St. Cloud with that pipe.
You know, I had heard, I had spoken to some other guys who got some big pike out of there too. And I don't know if they were the same size, or if they were bigger, but I mean, I know there was some decent fish in there. And, you know, it just is so much food. Nobody fishes big fish. Anybody that ever goes down there would use a worm under a bobber or a piece of corn, or, you know, they'd be targeting panfish.
Yeah.
And, I'm curious to this day what's in there. I mean, I'm very curious. It'd be fun. I mean, I back in the day they had paddle boats you could rent and you could take a paddle boat around, but you couldn't fish off that paddle boat. And man, I just dreamed about what it would be like to be able to put on a Rapala and go paddle around that shoreline, just trolling circles around that thing.
Oh yeah.
Of course, I never had the chance to do it.
Fast forward and getting a little closer to like what you do now, your fishing passion had to have influenced you in some way, you know, getting into the industry and doing the things you do now. Maybe kind of describe that, you know, kind of like where you're at today, you know, in the industry and, you know, just sort of, you know, how that all evolved in your life.
Yeah. Well, you know, I ended up going to college at a local central Minnesota college called St. John's University. They had I had relatives that had gone there. I was a football player. They have a top Division III football program. John Gilardi is a Hall of Fame coach that coached there. And the whole thing was just a great football program, great academics. And they had three lakes on campus. It was a wildlife refuge. So when I went out there and toured, and between the football program and me having relatives that had gone there and seeing those lakes, I'm like, oh, man. So, you know, even during college, there'd be times where, whether it was in the winter phrase fishing or in the open water season, there'd be times where I needed a study break or I needed to go clear my head. And man, I just grab my sticks and shoot down and walk the shoreline and cast and, you know, catch fish. And, but again, that was part of my education, part of my St. John's experience fishing was. And then, you know, I sold Kirby vacuum cleaners to help work my way through St. John's. You know, Division III schools don't offer scholarships. So I had the opportunity to get a Division II scholarship for football, but I really chose St. John's. And the way things worked out, coming from being the last of nine kids and my dad being retired, financial aid was such that I could, you know, basically pay as much out of pocket going to the D3 school of St. John's as I would at a D school with a scholarship. So with that being said, I stayed at St. John's. I sold Kirby Home Care Systems both to build up my resume, but also I needed to make some money, you know, for school. I did work study during the school year, but in the summers, you know, rather than lifeguarding or doing whatever, I needed to go and hustle. And so I did the Kirby thing. And then when I got out of college, I ended up, you know, getting into Kirby full time. I had done well during the three summers I had done it and actually kind of worked into some management spots. So I got into Kirby and I got a job in, not a job, I got, I was a manager and a recruiter and such in Wausau, Wisconsin for a while, working for my brother's distributorship. And then when I was 23, I got my own business, my own area distributorship out of Pulver, Wisconsin, which is a suburb of Stevens Point, Wisconsin. And when I was out there, I would fish the Wisconsin River. Just from shore, some really good fishing. Went on the boat a few times, but mainly from shore. It was good fishing, and it was fun, and new body of water. And then, you know what, then I worked as a consultant in the five-state area for Kirby for a while and traveled and helped other offices do well. And eventually I got chosen to go to the world headquarters of Kirby, which was in Cleveland, Ohio, i.e. Lake Erie.
Yeah.
So when I shot out there, you know, of course I was didn't know anybody. I just had work and I worked a lot, but you know what? I'd on weekends, I'd jump on my vehicle and I'd drive from Cleveland out to the Western Basin and I'd jump on, the Sassy Sal or the Irish Drifter. Both of those are headboats. And, you know, you can pay like $35 to step aboard. And, you know, remember the first time I ever stepped aboard one of these boats, I was so excited to fish on Lake Erie. And I sat in the middle of the boat and I drifted a, you know, a spinner and an emerald shiner or something. And I didn't know what I was doing. I just thought, well, walleye fish, and I'll just drift that spinner. And well, I started talking to some of the older guys there, and they're like, guy, you can't be in the middle of the boat. I'm like, what do you mean? He goes, well, no, the water's getting clear in Lake Erie, and that big boat floats over those walleyes. The walleyes swim to the side. So you want to get on the ends of the boat so you can cast away from the boat. I'm like, oh, okay, cool. He goes, and wait, what you need to do is come a half hour early and bring a shoelace with you. I'm like, what do you mean a shoelace? He goes, what you do is you bring a shoelace, you come a half hour early, you put your rod and reel, you're in the very front or the very back of the boat, and you tie it with a shoelace to reserve your spot right there. And then you go in and get a donut and a cup of coffee and use the restroom, whatever you need to do, and then your spot's reserved. So I did that, and then one of the guys showed me these things called an Erie Deary, you know, a weight forward spinner. And he showed me how to put the worm on it, and he showed me how to cast. No, you cast like into the wind, let it sink, and then you work the sweep, he called it. When you slowly reel that to the boat, it eventually turn as it caught up to the boat. And he told me how to work that thing. And so it wasn't but long. And I was, you know, you'd always put a buck in per person, and normally you get about 35 people on a boat. And after a while, I was winning that pot of money for the biggest fish. I got to tell you, the first time I caught a big, you know, I had 25-inch walleye. I caught this beautiful walleye. I looked at it and admired it, you know, and everybody's like, oh, man, nice one, you know. I tossed that thing back into the water. I thought I was going to get lynched. They don't let fish go in Lake Erie. You keep everything. And, you know, I'm being from Minnesota. I thought it was kind of cool to catch and release, you know, and not out there, man. It's catch and fillet.
Yeah.
So anyway, I learned real quick, but I started winning that big fish pot on a regular basis. And finally, this captain who recognized me is like, man, you know, the way you like to fish, there's a fishing club in Cleveland called the Western Cleveland Walleye Association. So I got a hold of this club in it once a month. Like many fishing clubs, they have guest speakers and things. And it just so happened that this guy that was a guest speaker, he was a pretty good charter captain from the Western and Central Basin. His name was John Selecki. He's got So Lucky Charters. And John gave a presentation about spring fishing on Lake Erie. And I thought, well, that's exactly what I want to do with my brothers. I want to bring them out when they can't fish walleyes in Minnesota. So I brought them out the end of April. And I ended up getting hooked up with John. And so I was fishing with John. And, you know, he's like, no, wait a second now. You know, and I was fishing, I was catching a lot of fish. And he's like, well, let me understand. So you just moved from Minnesota. So you live here now and you don't know anybody. Okay. And then you pay to go out on the Sassy Sal and Irish Drifter and stuff. He goes, I'll solve that problem. Why don't you become my first mate? I'll pay you to come in the boat. If you get all tips. And you know what, if you like cleaning fish, I love cleaning fish. I said, either you can clean the customer's fish. You get a buck of walleye. I'm like, are you serious? So I started first mating for John Selecki on the Selecki, and that not only got me fishing a lot more, it got me in tune with the whole fishing crowd out in Lake Erie and the captains. We during early part of the year was over, we'd move his boat from the Western Basin out of Rocky River, which is a suburb of Cleveland, and we'd fish the Central Basin. And, you know, when we fished the Central Basin, we were trolling out in that, you know, 60, 70 feet of water. And we'd troll, you know, 14 lines on a boat. We'd have a couple downriggers. We'd have, you know, three dipsies off of each side. We'd have a mast in the front of the boat with 100-pound jack run going off to a double planer board. We'd hang either jet divers or small dipsies off the planer boards. And, you know, you want to talk about giving a guy an education on deep water trolling. I mean, it was incredible. And so I really got dialed into that and, you know, first made it for him for a long time. And eventually I decided that, you know what, if I'm going to do this, even just for fun, I should get my captain's license and run some trips for him, because there was times where he had a regular job too. He couldn't run all of his trips. So I did exactly that. I went to a 1-week class in Chicago and took all my tests with the Coast Guard and passed them. And I've been a charter captain for, gosh, it's probably been 20 years now.
How do you articulate, you know, your learning curve and being on you know, giant Lake Erie, like it had to have been intimidating or just sort of bizarre the first time you go out there. Like, that's a totally new fishing experience. Like talk about how you, you know, built your confidence, or at least, you know, got through that whole, like, being on ginormous water.
Yeah. You know, you know, repetition builds confidence. And the more you do anything, the more confident you get at it. And I was mentored, you know, by some really good captains, and, you know, standing on the bow of their boat, helping them fill the cooler with walleyes, helping them with different parts of the boat. I mean, just from being around that, you pick up things. So by the time I was able to turn the key on my own, I mean, I had some pretty good experience. It was funny, though, because, you know, I ran some trips, but for a while I had a consulting business, my own consulting business, and I wanted to run one whole summer. I wanted to be a captain, at least for one full-time, a full-time captain for one whole summer, just to say I did it, because I was pretty confident that as life goes on with my professional work and such, I'd probably never get a chance to do that again. At least I didn't think I would. And there was a captain out on the western basin of Lake Erie that was an engineer. And he had two boats. So he'd run trips of his customers on weekends, and he'd use some vacation time to run some trips. But he had a special project he was working on this summer and said, you know I'm going to be tied up. He wanted to find somebody to run his boat for the summer. So my friends out in Lake Erie found out about him, found out kind of what I wanted to do, and they put us in contact. And so I went out and ran for a captain by the name of Bernie Wise out in the Western Basin. But I ran Bernie's boats. He had a 30-foot sport, and he also had another, I'm trying to think what kind of boat it was, but it was more of a twin screw. And but mainly I ran that big sport craft. And, you know, I remember when I went out there and met Bernie, Bernie wanted to take me out in the harbor and just kind of give me a quick test run, you know. And, you know, he was like, well, he was talking to me all about the fishing. I'm like, Bernie, I can catch walleyes. I am not worried about catching walleyes. I will catch the walleyes. My biggest fear is taking this big freaking boat with a single screw and bringing it in on windy conditions and parking it in these tight, tight quarters right next to other boats. He goes, oh, that's the easy part. I'm like, oh, maybe for you, you know, for me, I'm not worried one bit about catching walleyes. You kidding me? You go to Lake Erie and you get on some of those areas and you turn the graph on. Shoot, I can catch walleyes. This, I got to be able to navigate that boat. And I can remember, you know, still coming in, having butterflies in my stomach, coming into these tight harbors. You got these harbors that are, these boats are stacked like cordwood. And I can remember, in order to back this boat into my slip, I literally had to go down this tight area with boats parked on both sides of me on the docks. And I had to turn into, at about a 45-degree angle, I had to turn into a real nice boat that had a stainless steel anchor off the front. And I had to almost hit it and then put it in reverse and give it gas. Because when you gave it gas, it was the way the propeller was, it would slide the ass end back to the left. And I remember having to kind of park it in there. And, you know, I was never a cowboy, meaning I was never one of those guys that had to go in there and power load a boat or back it in with gusto. I always took it real careful. If I was going to crash and burn, I wasn't going to damage anything. It might be a little embarrassing, but I could navigate just nice and easy. And that's what I did. And I never crashed and burned. I will tell you, though, there was some of the captains I got to know, they got wind that I get a little nervous coming in there when I was new. So of course, if their trip ended early, I'd be pulling that boat in those tight quarters, and they'd be standing on a picnic table, Minnesota Joe, crash and burn. They'd be swinging nets, and you know, I'm like, oh God,
that's good stuff, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think that part is just, for any like Minnesotan inland guy, you know, that just grows up on small water. And then you go to these destination fisheries that are just, you know, just big, big water. It's, you know, there's a big element to that. Like for some people, it's, you know, it's just the adventure of it. And it's, you know, it's fun and it's an easy thing to do, but yeah, like it can also be really intimidating a lot of times. Like I talk about that. And we got to transition to kind of, you know, Lake of the Woods, something that you're really involved in, you know, place that you spend a lot of time nowadays. Like, you know, that's one of the biggest pieces of water you know, that we got here in the Midwest. I mean, you know, I mean, outside of the Great Lakes, right? Like you get over here. I think that's a big part of the adventure and the allure of a lot of those places for people that, you know, it's a destination fishery, and wherever they come from, you know, they don't, you know, they don't look out the window regularly at that big water. They don't get in a boat, you know, even like a 20-foot boat that would be, you know, kind of the, you know, the hot rod, you know, the Mustang of, you know, some small lake in Otter Tail County gets pretty small when you get out far enough and you can barely see shore anymore. You know, I mean, I think that's a big part of the adventure with a lot of those destination fisheries. I just feel like, you know, it's just kind of, you know, people can relate to that.
100%. You're so spot on. You know, even the comment you make about growing up in Minnesota and not being used to that big water, you know, even the day markers, the buoys, the nuns, the cans, the different kind of navigational aids out there. I mean, you know, taking your Coast Guard test, you know, I think for people that grew up fishing on the Great Lakes, a lot of that stuff is second nature. You know, when I took my Coast Guard test, it was all new. I mean, every bit of it was new, and it was, I think it was more challenging to comprehend the information and pass those tests because of that. But you know, you get through it. And then of course, once you get in that big water, a lot of that training that you've had comes to fruition because you can understand, oh, now I see what a day marker is. Now I see, you talk about Lake of the Woods. If Lake of the Woods was a Great Lake, it'd be the sixth largest. You know, the Minnesota part, the big open water of Minnesota side of Lake of the Woods is called Big Traverse Bay. And that piece of water by itself is about 30 miles north-south by about 25 miles east-west. And I was probably like a lot of people. You know, I started fishing Lake of the Woods ice fishing, going up and staying at a resort and going out ice fishing. And it was a number of years before I actually started open water fishing it because it was intimidating. And what got me having to learn the lake and having to go on Lake of the Woods was I started fishing the Minnesota Tournament Trail, the MTT. And that, you know, that there was a regular season, a couple of regular season tournaments on Lake of the Woods. And then there was the championship is still on Lake of the Woods in September. So, you know, I can't even remember on the river, you know, first year I fished the Rainy River because there was some fish in the river. You know, I fished the Rainy River. There's some nice fish in the river, but also it was a lot less intimidating.
Yeah.
And I remember day two, I went out in the lake, the basin, and there were high wind warnings. And I can remember going out in front and we just said, okay, we had a very average day in day one. We got to do something different here. You know, I was pissed. I'm competitive and I was just like, I'm pissed. You know, you look forward to that championship all year long. So we went out in front and there was high wind warnings for that second day of the tournament. And I remember going out there all by ourselves and a lot of the boats went way, way out, way across and stuff. And we went out and I talked to a lot of people, done a lot of homework. And I knew those fish were in the river. I knew some were staged out in front. So we went out in front in about 24 feet and we anchored up. And jigged over the side of the boat with jigs and frozen emerald shiners. And I'll tell you, as that wind started picking up, I mean, it was picking up, those waves were rolling through there. They were rolling through enough so that when our anchor rope would catch at the top of a wave, a lot of times the top of that wave would roll over the bow and roll into the boat. And we constantly had our bilge pumps on. And at some point in time, we had so many walleyes going that my partner quit fishing. And all he did is culled the fish that I caught. It was nonstop. And we rebounded real nice because, you know, we didn't get our overs that day. You know, that was still the days where you kept your fish. So, you know, Lake of the Woods has a slot limit, 19 and a half to 28 inches. You got to put them back. And you can keep one fish per person per day over 28, one walleye over 28 inches, or the wall if you want, whatever. And we didn't get our overs, but because we got so many nice walleyes, all of our fish were, you know, like that 19 and a quarter inch variety, just under the 19 and a half inch. And, you know, we came in and we finished, I think I can't remember if we finished 12th or something. And we got the I Sucked Yesterday award. That's for the team that makes up the most spots on day two. And that was kind of the start of going out in that big intimidating water. And then, you know, then you pre-fish it. And now you start going a little bit further on the nice days. And again, repetition builds confidence. And you know, of course, as time rolled on, you know, you can't catch fish out front on that south end. That's just too close. You got to make sure your spots are 30 miles yeah. across the lake. Yeah. And of course, you wake up that morning of the tournament, you can hear the trees rustling. You're like, oh, no.
Isn't that so true? Yeah, that's like a total, like, masterclass in fishing psychology that we always, you know, to get to a great destination, you got to drive by fish to get to fish. But once you're at that destination, no one would ever think to just fish by the dock because, you know, there can't be any fish there.
No,
you
got to
catch all the fish on the other side of the lake. Man, oh man, I think everybody can be a little bit honest with themselves and say they've done that anywhere that they've ever gone. It's just something funny about it. But I, you know, so obviously you moved back to, got back to Minnesota at some point in time after Erie and you got some ties up on Lake of the Woods. I mean, I'm just fascinated by the fishing. I don't get nearly enough time up on Lake of the Woods. I've enjoyed, you know, I mean, we've been up there. We've done some great projects up there. I've probably been up there working more than for play, to be honest with you. But I'm just fascinated by the size of it. You know, I'm that typical Minnesota boy born and raised that just, you know, I just really respect how big that body of water is. And it's just so interesting to me. Maybe talk a little bit about the patterns, things that you've learned over the years, some experiences you've had, and just some of the things that you love about, you know, the opportunities that we have this time of year.
For me, it was one of those deals where I started going up there ice fishing, like I mentioned, and, you know, every time I go ice fishing, you know, you always caught fish. I mean, you caught walleyes, you got saugers, you got some pout, you might get a big pike, you get some jumbo perch. And when you do, they're freaking humpbacks. Like, they're huge. And the colors on them just pop. And you know, you get your tulipies once in a while. And I mean, it's just, when you set the hook on Lake of the Woods, you truly never know what you're going to catch. It's a very consistent fishery. And then on top of it all, you know, when I started going up there, I was in college. I mean, gosh, dang it. You know, the resorts are fun. You know, they got good bars and restaurant. It's festive up there. Everybody's talking fishing. You get people from all over the United States and sometimes even beyond. I mean, just the whole atmosphere really played for me. And I just said to myself, gosh, if I'm going to take the time off to go fishing, why not drive a couple extra hours and go to the Lake of the Woods? I mean, I enjoy it so much. You know, I always make such good memories. So that's really kind of what got me going up there. And, you know, you talk about the opportunities. I mean, it's a very unique fishery. Number one, the thing that blows me away is, of course, the numbers. It's self-sustaining. It's all natural reproduction, but very consistent numbers of fish. Then, of course, you got monster fish. You know, they have, in order to have, you know, big walleyes in a system, you got to have the right gene pool. You got to have the right forage. I can tell you on Lake of the Woods as an example, when a walleye becomes about 25 inches long or it's 5 pounds, their diet shifts from eating, you know, lots of different things to really focusing on tulipies as a whole. Yeah, they eat other things too, but tulipies really become their focus. And that, you know, and having the right gene in the system and then having tulipies, and then just having a variety of forage, you know, if the shiners are ever low, if the perch are ever low, whatever, you get so many other forms of forage to fill the voids on Lake of the Woods. You get a lot of food, and that keeps that fishery healthy. And so with all that being said, I mean, I think that to me, that's what makes it unique, is that you always got a chance at a trophy, a fish of a lifetime. You got good numbers. The fish bite during the day because it's a stained water system. They actually bite better during the day than they do at night. So you don't have to be out midnight catching a walleye. And then just the whole atmosphere on the lake, you know, even like right now, I mean, right now, as we speak, we got people out ice fishing still. It's the end of March.
Yeah.
And you know, we got people out ice fishing, catching walleyes and monster pike. The monster pike are pre-spawn. So they're staging for the spawning areas, and people are out with tip-ups using big sucker minnows or, you know, dead alewife or whatever. And, you know, they're hanging them under quick strike rigs and they're whacking monster pike. I'm talking, you know, 40, 45, 48 inch in some cases pike. I mean, a lot of big pike in Lake of the Woods, a lot. And then you got people fishing walleyes still, and they're still picking away at their walleyes and their saugers before the ice goes out for the year. But then you go way out east and 30 miles to the east of Bidette, you know, you got three different boat ramps on the Rainy River that are open. And you get people dropping their boats in, going after the spring walleye run. You know, Lake of the Woods is border water with Canada. So our fish houses can be out about a month longer than the rest of the state of Minnesota. Our fish houses can be out overnight on the ice through March 31st. And then, of course, we have an extended fishing seasons. We got our you know, walleye and sauger season is through April 14th. And our pike season never closes. So those alone are some very unique things that create traditions. And you know, we talk about the walleye want to run on the Rainy River. I mean, to get out there amongst floating icebergs and be jigging for walleyes and to be catching monster walleyes that are heading up for the spawn. It's a catch and release season only. You have to, it's ice cold water. It's relatively shallow water. So the DNR isn't, they're not concerned with mortality for that part of the fishery. But, you know, for many, it's the first time they splash the boat of the year. For some, it's tradition. And then of course, you know, at the same time, we got people fishing sturgeon, and the sturgeon fishery on the Rainy River is, it's incredible. I mean, the DNR estimates, in conjunction with the OMNR and Ontario Ministry of Natural Resources, the organizations actually figure that from about that whole southeast corner, southwest corner of Lake of the Woods, from Morrison, Ontario, all the way down through Big Travis and the Rainy River, they believe that that section of water has over 100,000 sturgeon over 40 inches long. And that's a conservative estimate. So, I mean, it's, you talk about being a unique fishery, it really is.
You know, I'm just not always that good at it. You know, we've had some really great, you know, Lake of the Woods episodes here on the JMO podcast over the years where we kind of, you know, we kind of narrow it down. We pick a specific, you know, time of year, a specific season, even specific, you know, just fishing topics, and we really, you know, dig deep into them. Very, very technically advanced, great information, great guests and everything. But I know for sure that I haven't done a good enough job just because I'm not over there enough. I don't even really know how to articulate it like you just did, that, you know, just the opportunity that it is. You know, I'm glad we're talking about it in that way, that it's such an unbelievable, you know, fishery and opportunity. You know, you're experiencing things different. You feel like you're in another country. If, you know, if you're from, you know, the inland of the Midwest, I just think that, you know, there's a lot of people that know about this. A lot of people go up there. You know, we're not educating anybody on what these opportunities are for people that do it. But man, it's for people that don't do it. I mean, this is real bucket list stuff. This isn't just casual. These are like bucket list opportunities, I guess, in my opinion.
Yeah, no, they are. They said, you know, Lake of the Woods and the Rainy River, it's a world-class fishery. You know, I like to explain, you know, for people that don't know our area, I like to, from an adult learning perspective, you kind of learn to break things up into threes or fives, right? That's how the brain interprets them. And so when we talk about the Lake of the Woods area, I break it up into three areas. First, you have the Rainy River. And if you can imagine, the Rainy River flows out of Rainy Lake, which is about 60 miles east of Baudette, Minnesota. And the river flows straight west, and it's our international dividing line with Canada. So the Rainy River flows 60 miles out of Rainy Lake, straight west to Baudette. And then when it hits a small town of Baudette, it turns north and goes 12 more miles and feeds Lake of the Woods. Well, When it feeds Lake of the Woods, at the mouth of the river, of course, you have a whole bunch of big resorts that are on the mouth. It's almost like it's a nice harbor for them, and it's beautiful, and it's just but you got a whole bunch of resorts there. And of course, at the mouth of the river, you also have a bay that people might have heard of called Four Mile Bay. And Four Mile Bay is simply, it's a bay that kind of buffers the mouth of the river with the lake. So you go through, when the charter boats come out of the river of all the resorts, they'll get up on plane on the river and they go through Four Mile Bay for a short distance, you know, maybe a couple miles. And then they come up to what's called Lighthouse Gap. And what the Lighthouse Gap is, you have Pine Island on the U.S. side, and on the Canadian side, you have Sable Island. And right down the middle of this opening, it's where the two islands come together and the river basically rushes through it. It's like 30 feet deep through there, and all the charter boats run through there. But that's where the Rainy River enters Lake of the Woods. And then you have the second part of Lake of the Woods. And the second part is really Big Traverse Bay. And that's the big open water of Lake of the Woods, like we discussed. It's 30 miles north-south by 25 miles east-west. What's interesting to me, and we had a lot of resorts along that south end of the lake too. You know, what's interesting to me is that Big Traverse Bay, the deepest spot in Big Traverse is only 38 feet deep, which means the whole thing is full of life. You know, you don't got dead spots that are 250 feet deep or anything like that. I mean, this whole thing is prolific. And we, you know, quite honestly, we ice fish it, we open water fish it. You know, it gets fished as long as people are fishing Lake of the Woods. That Big Traverse Bay is, it's like an aquarium. It's loaded with fish. The majority of it's, you know, deep mud. And then we got in different areas, we got reefs popping out, you know, and you can imagine, you know, you got miles and miles of deep mud. You know, that in its own right's a good fishery. And then when you have a reef popping up, that's like a magnet for walleyes and saugers. And then the third part of Lake of the Woods is that little tip of Minnesota that sticks up into Canada. It's called the Northwest Angle. Now, the Northwest Angle is the northernmost point of the contiguous United States. And that's where the 14,552 islands of Lake of the Woods begin. You know, we have about 15 resorts up at the angle. We got about approximately 40 plus on the south end of the lake. You know, when you drive to the Northwest Angle, you actually have to drive about 40 miles through Canada, and then you enter back into the United States up at the angle. So you have to drive through a foreign country in order to reach your own. Now, if a person doesn't have a passport or they don't want to, you know, drive through Canada, the way to get around that is by staying on the lake. If you stay on the lake, you can stay in Minnesota and get up there. So we actually, I mean, some people will use their own boats. In the winter, we have snowmobile trails that go up there. They'll use their own sleds. Otherwise, we have a passenger service that it'll take you up via charter boat in the summer, and it'll take you up via Bombardier in the winter, and it'll keep you in Minnesota. But again, just this, that whole thing up there is very unique. You know, we have the northernmost point buoy up there. And when you get up to that area of the lake that really where the Canadian Shield begins and all the islands begin, you know, now are you talking multi-species, and now you're talking world-class musky fishery. I mean, if there's musky nuts out there, I mean, they know Lake of the Woods, and that's where it all begins, is at the Northwest Angle going northeast all the way to Kenora. There's about a 40-mile stretch of islands there, and that area is just killer, you know, so good.
I like the way you describe how the vibe and just the great energy and just the fun, you know, like the resorts and just and the restaurants. And it's like when you're up there, it's very touristy, but it's very positive. Like anytime I've ever gone up there, I could totally, you know, totally spot on like how you describe just being up there, you know, even off the water. Like, you know, I don't think every other destination can really boast that. You know, some places are just good to go for fishing. Some places, you know, whether it's just because they're primitive or there's just no infrastructure or whatever it is, you know, we go there just for the fishing, but it's not for everybody, right? It's a little adventurous. You know, Lake of the Woods has that great, you know, it's a fun, far away place and it's very adventurous. But when you get there, you know, it's family friendly. I mean, I guess is one way to put it, but it's for the hardcore. It's for everybody. It's for the hardcores and it's for young people. I mean, you know, what's better than chasing tip-ups on late ice when you got young, you know, kids, you know, putting their hands on big pike for the first time in their lives? Like, that's, like, I just feel like that's the memories that you know, are made at a destination like that. But, you know, this can't be the last time that we talk together, because I just feel like there's a million topics we gotta, you know, highlighting Lake of the Woods in this way, I think, is important. But I do want to talk, before we're done here, something more specific. You know, let's dial in on maybe some of the fishing that's going on right now. I'm going to try to lean you into like that Rainy River run. What's the status up there? What's going on up there?
Yeah. Well, the first thing I'll tell you, and this is not new information to you or probably anybody else, Mother Nature is in control. You know, I mean, really.
Oh, yeah.
Because we, you know, a few weeks ago, we had ice opening up on the Rainy River. We had boat ramps open. And when people first got out fishing on the Rainy River this year, and it was early, it was, you know, it's probably a couple weeks ago, I guess, mid-March. But, you know, I'll tell you, it was lights out. I mean, they were catching 100, 200, and 200 plus fish a day per boat on the river. And it was just, I mean, just so good. So, so good. Those fish were loaded in the river already. And, you know, you never know. But I talked to some guides who think that some of those fish might have moved in November, all things, just after deer hunting, and were probably there all winter long. But nonetheless, the river's loaded with walleyes. Well, Then Mother Nature came and, you know, threw a curveball and it got cold on us. We had single digit temps at night, and it put a skim of ice onto the river again. We had three different access points open. You know, it was the first one that I was, the river always opens up from, you know, the east moving west. And, you know, we watch real close that open water and advertise when that open water reaches that first boat ramp. Well, that first boat ramp is called Nelson Park in Birchdale. That's the first one that opens up where you can get big boats in. And then just downstream, I think probably about 8 miles, is Frontier. That's the second one. And that one's opened up. And then heading towards Bidette, you know, downstream, you know, the next one is right by the Rapid River coming in by Clemenson Rapids, and that's called Vitus, the Vitus Landing. But all three of those landings are open already, and we've just gotten some cold weather, so we've got a skim of ice. Some of the hardcore anglers are going out busting that 2 inches of ice with their boats and getting out there and just fishing amongst the icebergs. But, you know, we're looking at the forecast, and, you know, we have through April 14th to fish. And looking at the forecast, the last couple of weeks of the season are going to be, you know, more traditional spring, warmer. And so people are going to get back out fishing again. How are they doing it? Well, a couple ways. First off, jigging. You know, jigging this time of year is very, very popular. This is the time of year where people will put on a jig, and they'll put on one of those big, like a pick your poison, whether it's a beef fishing, big rib tail plastic, or a Northland or a Berkeley or whatever. Take your plastic, whichever one you want, but those big plastics with the ribs on them and in the rings and stuff. But they'll put those big plastics on a jig. And a lot of times what they'll do is, in some cases, they'll pitch them to shore and kind of work them back to the boat with the current. In other cases, what they'll do is they'll take the trolling motor and you use kind of a bigger jig. Of course, you gauge it to the current. Normally, it's going to be anywhere from a quarter to a half ounce as a rule. And then what you do is you let your jig down to the bottom. It might go to about a 45-degree angle, and you troll real slow against the current with your troll motor. And then what you do is you can go pull that jig upstream. You kind of pull it up, and then you let it go back and thunk the bottom. And you pull it up, and you let it go back and thunk the bottom. And, of course, every once in a while, you let it back, and it doesn't make it to the bottom, and you set that hook. So that's one way to get them. Another way is people use jigs in frozen emerald shiners. You know, the emerald shiners in Lake of the Woods, that's a main forage for the walleyes. They absolutely love them. And they're really hard to keep alive. So the local bait dealers will freeze them. And, you know, even that's interesting. Every bait dealer has their own recipe. Some think you need to flash freeze them and play them out on a tray and flash freeze them. Others will put them in with some canning salt into water first to kind of preserve them and then freeze them. Everybody's got their own recipe. But anyway, you pop a jig on, or a emerald shiner on a jig, and that can be lights out. And of course, the third way that I've found that really is effective is using a three-way rig and a shallow diving crankbait and just trolling real slow up against the current. You know, if those fish are a little sluggish, if they're spread out, you know, you're covering water, you're sticking a crankbait with that water flowing downstream, you know, like imagine a shallow diving and stick bait, a rapple or something. And, you know, you're pulling it up and you're pulling it in front of a lot of fish. And, you know, a lot of times that'll be not only a tool to find the fish in case you do want to jig them, if they're concentrated, it's also just it's a good lure to put in the front of the face of a bunch of walleyes and can turn a tough day of fishing into a really good day of fishing. Catches a lot of big fish too. You know, big fish love crankbaits.
Yeah, man. And the conditions this year, right? Like every conversation that I have, I think every single podcast I have, people probably gonna start writing in, you know, annoyed by me asking the same questions all the time as it pertains to conditions. But I think that fishing is so much of conditions, or just considering conditions. And as we enter new season, every time we get into these shoulder seasons, right? Like we're transitioning from winter to spring. You know, the conditions, they're different every year. What are the conditions up there right now? And some of those considerations, you know, just what the environment's like up there.
Yeah. Yep. We got a dusting of snow recently. So there's just some light snow on the ground, and that's going to melt here real quick again. We had no snow for a long time, got a little dusting and that's going to melt in the next few days probably. But a little bit of light dusting of snow. I mentioned the river has a little skim of ice in most areas, but it's opening up very quickly. When you head out to the lake, there it's winter. I mean, you still have good ice. You know, because we've been holding our our overnight temps have been in the single digits and teens, that's holding that ice really well. So the few resorts that still have fish houses out or have ice access, the ice access is for side-by-sides and four-wheelers. So, you know, people are able to go and either fish in the open or bring out their collapsibles. But that's kind of what it is. It's a tale of two sides of the lake. One side, there's still ice fishing and kind of milking that towards the end. And when you get down by the Rainy River there, of course, people are chomping at the bit to get back in because fishing's so good right now. It'll be interesting to see, you know, Mother Nature always determines. It'll be interesting to see when those big girls, there's some big fish in the river already, but when those big girls, you know, one of the draws for that spring fishery is that a lot of the big walleyes from the basin, from Big Traverse Bay, they slide up the Rainy River to spawn. So you get all these big walleyes from Lake of the Woods that are constricted in this relatively small river. And that can lead to some really memorable fishing. And so that's, time will tell. You know, what's timing going to be like this year? Are those big girls going to slide up before that season's over now that we've had some cold weather move in again? Or is it going to get warm all of a sudden and that sunlight and that warmer water infiltrating the system is going to turn them on and they're going to be sliding up in waves like they do? I mean, again, it's every year's different.
I mean, it's got to be some low flow to some extent, right? There's just a little bit lack of runoff. And, you know, what about the tributaries? You know, that's always a big topic of conversation, just the timing of it all. You said that, like, you know, people got to realize, like, you know, that Rainy River run, the variables are huge, you know, and you know, so like timing of everything kind of coming together like cogs in a wheel, you know, but like some of those things, you know, if the flow or if the current, you know, if the runoff is a little bit less, do you feel like that might affect, you know, the pattern of the fish? Like, are they going to feel that current? Are they going to be pressed to come in time? Or, you know, and what's the status of, you know, the tributaries there, the forks?
Yeah, well, you know, you're right. We got a couple of feeder rivers upstream called the Big Fork and Little Fork. And when they let loose, you know, all that ice and mud and debris and everything infiltrates the Rainy River. And, you know, oftentimes the river will get dirty and that'll shut down walleye fishing for a number of days until that the water has a chance to flush out and get cleaned up again. The saving grace is that sturgeon will still bite when the water is chocolate milk. So if that ever does happen, you know, and you're up fishing, just plan on making a sturgeon trip now and revert to sturgeon. And they're scent feeders, so they can, you know, find your lure and they can follow your scent trail up and they'll still cooperate. But you're right. If those forks break open, you know what? That can shut things down for a while. We don't have a lot of flow this year. To your point, we did not have a lot of snow this year. So the water conditions are relatively clear with this colder weather. And we only got a couple of weeks of the season left. It certainly appears like the forks are going to hang on. But again, I have no idea. You know, time will tell. One of the other conversations that was happening, you know, and I don't know if it'll happen now, but when it was so warm so early in March, and those accesses opened up, people were bound. They were convinced that, you know, the river would open up all the way to the lake. Well, the reason that's important is because, you know, our walleye and sauger seasons open through April 14th on 4 Mile Bay, which is at the mouth of the river, and the Rainy River from March 1 to April 14th. It's a catch and release season only. On the lake, it's still a keep season all the way through April 14th. So if by chance on those rare years that the open water of the river makes it to the lake, you could be fishing out past the Lighthouse Gap where Pine Island and Sable Island are out in the big Traverse Bay. You could be fishing against that ice pack with open water and be keeping your walleyes and saugers out there because that's technically the lake. So it's just every year is different. It's interesting. One of the things I thought was really interesting was last year, you know, our ice fishing was very average. It was okay, but it was average. And of course you get a lot of haters coming out saying, oh, Lake of the Woods is getting fished out, this, that, and everything else. Yeah. Well, then you, you know, the Facebook pros, but right. then you come out to this year and longtime resort owners, longtime guides who have decades of experience are saying it was one of the best ice fishing years they've ever seen with numbers and quality of walleyes. Would those fish did this hatch overnight and become 19 inches? I mean, so, you know, it just goes to show, you know, that we don't know what's going on with the fishery and, you know, we lean a lot on our DNR. Our DNR, you know, we have large lake specialists that study the lake year round, and between the netting and the seining of young of the year fish and everything else, they got a lot of data on that lake, and they think the lake's in very good shape. You know, I don't know this to be true, but I got a little bit of a hypothesis. Back in 2014, we had an 80-year rain event where it just rained for like 2 or 3 days straight. And I mean, the Rainy River was just ripping logs, whole tree systems and logs and debris from the woods moving downstream. When you backed a charter boat up, you had to figure out which small log you were going to hit, because you're going to hit something. It just mattered backing out of there. And boats were hitting logs all summer long out in Big Traverse Bay. And it was just, but when that happened, I think what happened was so much water got pushed through that system, because our water goes through, you know, Big Traverse Bay, goes up through the northwest angle, and then it goes northeast about another 40 miles to Kenora, where there's a dam. Then it goes into the Winnipeg River, Lake Winnipeg, and then up to Hudson Bay. So, so much water was getting pushed back then. I think that it pushed a lot of the forage from the basin up north, because all of a sudden our guides at the northwest angle were talking about how they were catching such big walleyes up amongst the islands, bigger than normal. And all of a sudden our basin bite died a little bit. It wasn't very good. It took about a year and a half for it to come back. Well, fast forward to the summer of 2022, we had record-breaking high water. And the amount of water pushing through that system again was just incredible, how much water went through that system. Well, I'm pretty sure my gut tells me that, you know, that blast of water through there pushed a lot of that forage up north again. And our basin bite, you know, kind of went downhill. Just, I mean, it wasn't as what it normally would be for about a year, year and a half until it recovered. And I think this is a year that just those fish made their way back, because the forage made its way back. And now our basin's loaded again.
For people that haven't done it, or haven't, you know, looked very seriously at what Lake of the Woods has to offer, even just this time of year. But, you know, it's a fishery, you know, 365 days a year. So there's a lot of conversations left to be had. But, you know, that's just my big point in all this. And I appreciate it. It's kind of the first show of its kind to really, 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 really start to highlight the big picture of Lake of the Woods. So anyways, I'm rambling on.
You know, the other thing I would say too is, you know, It was a little bit more high level, just kind of setting up Lake of the Woods, because it's such an expansive fishery with so much going on. And, you know, it kind of sets it up in people's heads. But I think the other thing is, and I've always appreciated this, you know, we got a lot of resorts, and our resorts are, you know, if you've never been to Lake of the Woods, and I'm not talking about the hardcore angler, you know, the hardcore angler is going to want to bring their own equipment and do it on their own and figure it out. But, you know, if you're not a hardcore angler, you know, to be able to come and go to a resort that offers full service fishing, whether you're, if it's in the summertime, you could be stepping into a charter boat and the rods, reel, tackle, bait, licensed charter captain, everything's included. And, you know, those charter boats have a very high level of success, because these licensed charter captains, they're fishing nets on their own. They get the credentials, the captain credentials of the Coast Guard and everything else, but they're also networking with other captains on the water in real time. So they purposely will go to different spots and figure out where those fish are and what they're doing today. But then, you know, you got the Northwest Angle, same thing, jumping on a boat with one of those folks up there and fishing amongst the 14,000 islands. If you're ice fishing, then of course it's a matter of having a resort set the fish house for you. And basically you go to the fish house, it's holes are drilled, it's heated. And the only reason I say that is because I'm always interested in opening up the great outdoors and opening up fishing to those who maybe aren't so hardcore. They would like to do it with their family maybe, but don't have the equipment or the understanding or the know-how. And you can go to a resort up there, one of these fishing resorts, and they got you. You know, all you got to do is punch in the address and your GPS and get up there. They do the American plan, the rod, reels, the fishing, the lodging, and all the meals are taken care of. And I say that simply because I'm encouraging people to, you know, if you're considering doing something different this summer, whether it's Lake of the Woods or anywhere else, consider going on a fishing trip and getting some people that'll watch your back and take care of you on the trip. It could be a gift to your kids that keeps on giving for the rest of their life.
Lake of the Woods is probably the most turnkey fishing destination for anybody. That's the whole spectrum of whatever level you're on, whatever price range you're in, whatever category, however far, you know, like, it's the most turnkey on the biggest scale. Everything you just said, that's such a great point. And, you know, yeah, I just really hope that, you know, hopefully somebody out there, even if it's one person, just for starters, just really kind of really gives that a good, strong look. Cause I think that's a big thing on this podcast. I really like to educate people on, you know, current, you know, just really, you know, the great fishing topics that are out there. That's always going to be the case. But, I'm always trying to highlight fishing opportunities. And one thing I probably try to do too much is, you know, highlight the opportunities that are maybe a little lesser seen or undervalued or whatever. Lake of the Woods probably gets taken for granted too much by the industry. Like, there's a reason that so many people go up there, and it's, you know, family friendly. There's a reason that there's a million fish houses out there, you know, in the wintertime, and they plow the roads. There's a reason the boat ramps are overfilled, you know, in the springtime. I mean, it's turnkey, and it's not, you know, it doesn't have to be sophisticated. You know, we can talk sophisticated, but it doesn't have to be. That's a conversation for a different day, but Yeah. What a great way to kind of wrap it up. But anyways, Joe, let's wrap this up. We're going to have to do this again. I mean, this is awesome stuff. I just love highlighting, you know, kind of you getting to know you and kind of what your background is and how you kind of fell in love with and got connected up there on Lake of the Woods and the things that are going on up there right now. I love the updates and just talking about the conditions and the offerings that are up there, and hopefully it gets people's gears turning. It is that time of year, right, where we're thinking about, you know, where we're going to go on a fishing trip this summer or where we're going to go, you know, for some people they're already getting started with that. But I mean, it's that time of year where we need to be thinking about what our options are to go on a fishing trip, you know, whether it's with our buddies, on our own, or with our families. And so I think this is perfect timing for that. Anyways, let's close this out, man. Anything that you want to promote, you know, yourself, if anybody ever had any questions, or if there's anything, you know, just anything whatsoever, we'll just sign it off like that.
Yeah, you know, I would just say, I encourage everybody to get out fishing this summer. And, you know, if anybody is interested in Lake of the Woods, I'd be remiss if I didn't mention our website. And that is Lake of the Woods, MN for Minnesota, lakeofthewoodsmn.com. And yeah, we have all our resorts and, you know, just a ton of information about our area. And it makes it simple. You know, again, this isn't rocket science, to your point. You know, if you want to go on a fishing trip and you don't fish very often, get a hold of a full service resort. We're not the cosmopolitan pricing. We're still old fashioned pricing up at Lake of the Woods. And, you know, I think that also opens up the door and is one less barrier to families who are, you know, they have to be a little bit price conscious. And I think that you're going to find, we're still kind of an old fashioned area that way. And that opens the door to some good family fun.
That's it, man.